Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the Offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles in the middle of the Art Deco wonder known as the Eastern Columbia. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host once again, Mr. Phil Lerness, ladies and gentlemen.
German. You were so good. We are very popular in Germany. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, I got to stop watching the History Channel.
You know, we have new nicknames.
What?
I don't know if you ever had a nickname. I mean, you're so identified with Langley and the, you know, and being an inventor and an artist and a painter and a dancer.
Dancer. I'm so identified with that. It's unbelievable. People, hey, dancer. They yell at me down the street.
Also, you're quite well identified with wanting to be a dentist.
That's right. Hey, dentist! They'll yell at me at the restaurants.
We have new nicknames that I'm of which I'm kind of fond. I must admit.
Tell me now. Okay, where did they come from? How do you
Bob
know?
Bob Pliskin, our loyal listener, who posts some things, amusing things on. He amuses and conquers on Facebook.
Very good.
Maybe has some time on his hands and decided to do anagrams.
Anagrams of our names.
From our names.
Oh, fantastic.
And there's a couple of quite amazing ones. It is not easy, by the way, to come up with
anagrams. That requires a special brain.
I did always enjoy that the word puzzle game where you would
jumble.
Try to come up with as many different words from a word or a phrase as possible. I always found that to be... But anagrams, coming up with them.
And in the newspaper, the jumble thing, I'm hopeless at.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
So what do you get?
But you don't get the newspaper. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's also why I'm hopeless at that. Because I play it without looking at it.
So do you want to hear mine first or yours?
I want to hear yours first.
Phil Lerness.
Yeah.
Four letters in the first name. Space. Eight letters in the last name.
Yeah.
What is brilliant about this is that it fits perfectly. Four, space, eight. Hell inspires.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good, because that's also you in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, and it's also an axiom. Nothing inspires like hell. I mean, every religion is pretty much based on that.
On hell inspires.
Yeah. Inspires you to be on the straight and narrow.
So, ocho cinco, nuffity nuff, hell inspires.
Hell inspires, I think, is what we're going to go with from now on.
Or it could be a drag name if you're like Hell Inspires.
Hell Inspires. But then it's not right, because then it's not the four space
That's
eight.
Right. Okay.
Dean Haglund, which is, if I'm not mistaken, four space seven
correct.
Letters. How about lead handgun?
Lead? Why not lead handgun?
I like lead handgun, though. Lead handgun, but lead handgun actually kind of makes some sense. Like, you're the top shot.
I'm the top lead. I'm the lead handgun.
Yeah.
That's funny, in a way, what with the gunman.
And number one with a bullet.
And number
Your
one with
a... Your friend in podcasting, Mr. Lead Handgun.
And dragging down every show, the lead handgun. Mr. Heavy. It's Monday. What a weekend, huh?
That sounds interesting. How was your Easter?
Oh, work. I worked nonstop. There's an excitement coming up this art walk that I... Should I say now? Probably.
Sure, go ahead.
Why not?
Because we won't have...
A fresh show between now and art walk.
Well, we will. We will. We'll have one.
Oh, yeah, we'll have one.
And that will be our fourth anniversary show. On May 9th. Correct?
Wow, that is correct. Yeah. So I there's an art gallery space downstairs. The show left, and the two gallery curators asked me if I want to put up my art in there and, as well, paint live in front of people during the art walk and during the day. So I'm painting some larger pieces that this space can't accommodate, and there's higher ceilings in there. So I'm taking my 50 yards of 84-inch double-primed canvas, taking it downstairs on street level and painting in a store window amongst my art.
Taking it to the street.
Taking it to the street. So if you find yourself just walking down Broadway, please come in and say, hey, what you painting? Because I'm sure that'll happen every 4 minutes as I'm painting.
And you said we're going to podcast from down there.
Yeah, why don't we podcast from down there? Since I'll have the key to the place, it'll be storefront, tons, millions of people passing in front of a window on a daily basis at Broadway 9th in downtown Los Angeles.
And that is really, for anyone who's looking maybe to host a installment of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour anywhere in the world, all we're really looking forward to for in a location is any place we can get into.
That's right.
You know, if we got a key, if the door is open for us, that's where we go.
That's where we go. So you're suggesting now we start a global campaign to podcast around the world.
No. However, we are going to be doing that anyway, are we not? May 21st, the U.S. premiere of, I almost called it Your Truth Is Out There. Although that's not a bad name. It actually is very, very true. Right.
The
Truth Is Out There, U.S. premiere, Retro Dome, Saratoga, California, immediately following the screening. Included with the price of admission, a live one-hour podcast.
This much fun.
Of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. We'll take the stage after a break for mingling and bathroom break and concessions, and then we'll take the stage for 1 hour
and we'll
timed live. We will have stories to tell. We will also take questions from the audience.
Love it. We're
going to be doing this in other places. We've already planned to do this upstate New York near Buffalo in October.
Yes.
No, lots of. It's not that I'm really planning it. I think it's just happening.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
I
watched Jesus Christ Superstar again.
That's, did you really?
Yeah. It was on.
That's how you celebrated Easter.
Easter while I was, rewiring the entire house. You noticed the new lighting in the TV area. No,
Easter is one of those holidays. We talked actually a lot about Easter last year, which was interesting, and in that we'd never talked about anything like that before. And but it is one of those holidays that I find myself increasingly each year enjoying. And I never kind of repeat what I do. It always is something
fresh and new.
Yeah, wherever the mood takes me.
Uh-huh.
And I always go into it with such a bad attitude, too. Because, as you know, I mean, I affiliate it as a Christian holiday, and you know I got off on a bad start with my own people.
Right. And, yes.
And yet it is such a beautiful holiday, and you can come at it from so many different ways.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it was
Did
it
you
was
hide some good. Eggs? Is that what happened?
No. Lily dyed some eggs, though, but we went to a little Easter celebration, a brunch, and drum circle and a ritual.
Come on.
And it was really quite
not the one that stabbing lovely. Happened at in Venice Beach, that drum circle.
It was near there, but it was not that one.
Oh, okay, good.
That's so funny, too, because Lily's mom, when she heard that that we were going to a drum circle for... She screamed, "That's pagan!" No.
I think they drummed in other religions.
And then the next thing about it, you're just going to some basement. Okay, wait a second. Back up for a minute. Are drum circles inclined to take place in basements? And
what?
Pagan ceremonies in basements? What?
She saw Salem Art School for Girls. That's what. That's what happened there.
Is that a Roger Corman movie?
No, that's even worse. That's Charlie's Angels. Why can I think of Spelling?
Aaron Spelling?
Aaron Spelling's first movie of the week. Excellent. With Kate Jackson, oddly enough. Salem Art School for Girls. Don't tell me I don't watch the classics. Come on.
You don't watch the classics.
Are you kidding? Salem Art School for Girls? I cannot tell you how awesomely cheeseball this is. This is a 1971, maybe 72. And the art teacher is Satan, apparently. And here's your spoiler alert. It's an art school that doubles as some sort of indoctrination with Satan.
As they all do.
As they all do.
The reason, you know, we alluded to this, the reason on May 2nd there will not be a fresh show, as you called it. We're not saying it's pre-recorded. We are saying that we have a special guest.
Yes, we love the special guests.
And through the magic of podcasting, it will be a brand new show, although we are scattered to all sides of the wind.
Or yes.
No, we'll be in London.
Yes.
Recovering from the world premiere of The Truth Is Out There. It takes place this coming Saturday, April 30th at 5:10 p.m. in London.
At the British Film Institute.
British Film Institute, South Bank National Film Theater. One, tickets are still available.
Wow.
We'll put the link again on the website here, chillpackhollywood.com.
I will do
that. CHILLPAK Hollywood.com. We'll also put the link on the Facebook page, facebook.com/truthmovie.
Let's do that.
And, of course, on the film's official website, there's a link already there, truth-is-out-there.com.
Right.
You can always find on that website a link to how you can see the film. Right now, that's the only official screening that we've announced.
Mm-hmm.
Within a couple of days, tickets will become available, maybe even by the end of the day, for the U.S. premiere. And, of course, you'll be able to order eventually the DVDs and the Blu-rays and all that through the
right.
website. Now, as I said, I'll put the link on chillpackhollywood.com, where you can, of course, find this show.
Yes, you can.
Where you can subscribe via iTunes, and mm-hmm. where you can increasingly find more of our older shows, because we're slowly making those available.
We sure are.
We got a complaint, a criticism, a suggestion of improvement about the website from listener Constance Connie, Michener.
Uh-huh.
And I hope I'm saying the last name right.
I think.
Michener? Michener?
Michener?
Michener? Okay. Connie, who always delights me. And anyway, her suggestion was to point out that when she clicks on the links that I embed in the description of the show.
Yeah.
And when I say I mean our minions, our yeah. staff of thousands.
We have staff? Can I meet them?
When I click on... Well, that would cheapen it. They're all living in fear of you.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Let's keep that up.
You're like the great all-powerful dean.
I'm the lead handgun. Don't kid yourself.
So when she clicks on the links that are embedded in the description while listening to the show, streaming the show, playing the show there on the website,
right.
It redirects the page. It automatically replaces the page where she was listening to the show with the page she's clicked on.
Instead of embedding it or having it like a pop-up.
She suggested that we add the code target equals blank into the HTML code that I put in there so that it will open it up in a new window.
Look at that smartness.
Yes, and so I want to address this here.
Okay.
Because I go back and forth with this over our web with our right. web designer all the time and with this, and there are many of us who do not, who block such pop-ups, who block new
right.
windows opening because so many things are embedded that will do that automatically, ads and these other things.
Right.
So I tend to try to design things to prevent that.
Right. However.
However, you always can. And this is how I open any link anyway, just to be safe when I'm going through something. I just right-click, and I open it in a new tab.
And the old tab stays open.
Of course.
I see. Kim, is there not – and I love that we talk about computer coding on the show. School openings, celebrity
school closings.
School closings and computer coding. Is there not a coding term?
Well, this is what we mean when we say it's your Chillpack Hollywood Hour. You write us with something, we address it.
Right.
Before dismissing it out of hand.
I would suggest that there's some sort of code that can open in a new tab and still let the player play. No?
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I was just kind of, also I'll admit, I was just kind of shocked that somebody is...
clicking through your links?
Clicking it while listening to the show.
Well, what else are they going to do? Just stare at the little roly ball? I mean...
Work? Get some work done? Isn't that what you do? I mean, isn't
no,
that what I do?
This show requires 100% concentration.
I must keep reading the description.
I must
All right,
focus.
Well, we'll look into it, I guess. If you, and when I say we, I mean our staff will look into that.
We must focus on our witty
anyway,
banter.
Anyway, thank you, Connie. Thank you for finding the links interesting enough. And, of course, for listening to the show.
This sends a self-esteem issue on your part, then, if you think that you just put up all of these links, do all this work, and that nobody's clicking on it or researching or going further than just clicking the show, listening to it, and deleting it. Is what you assume most of our legion of listeners do?
I'm going to have to ask you to do what Connie does, what so many people do, which is please submit your questions in writing.
You are a dick.
Yeah, we know. You know what?
Hell inspires.
You know what we have not done in a long time? And before we get into all the events of the day and the news and all this, what the hell have you been reading? We promised a long time ago that we were going to talk about, and we did a show on books. We finally did do, and of course we had author Chris Mancini on not too long ago. But what have you been reading?
Well, I got a couple great books. One is Light and Color for the Realist Painter by John Gurney. This book is so popular now that it comes by the boatload out of China, and it immediately sold out.
Wow.
And you get actually pictures of the boat crossing China showing that it's on its way to North America for all of those who bought. I had to wait 4.5 weeks from buying it at Borders.
Can you repeat that name again?
Yes, it's it is the... Well, now you made me forget it.
No, don't get it.
It's
you can show it to me after the show.
Color and Light for the Realist Painter.
Okay.
By Gurney, Gurney. So I'm reading that. It's really fantastic, and it's sort of the next stage in art theory, art to color and light theory. It's really good. And then also reading, guess this, my grandfather, who was a he was kind of a pre-blogger in Sweden, in Stockholm. He was Finn in the national newspaper who wrote about daily life in Stockholm. He wrote
what we used to call a columnist.
Yes.
Pre-blogger.
Yes. Pre-blogger. A columnist.
I love that. The thing, all these people reading it going, well, I love his writing, but I wish someone could tell me what a pre-blogger is. Well, it's someone before a blog. What's a blog?
Well, but a columnist would suggest that he's like hard-hitting news stories. He would just...
No, a columnist writes a column.
Yeah, okay.
About whatever that column
is about. Which was sort of about kind of everything and nothing.
Right. Herb Kane is perhaps the most famous columnist, certainly one of the most famous columnists here. Army Archer, columnist.
Fantastic.
Walter Winchell,
excellent example. So the Swedish Walter Winchell was my grandfather, and he wrote a book about...
And much like your grandfather, also opened a successful chain of donut stores.
I did not
Winchell.
Know.
Yeah.
He didn't call him Lead Handgun, though. He wrote a book about his life amongst the Laplanders, and I'm reading it now. It's quite fascinating.
That's awesome.
I know. Isn't it? So those are my books. What are you reading?
I am reading
Popeye
Gurney's Color and Light. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I wrote that down. That was a note for the staff to fill out in the show description later. A couple of wide range of things.
Tell me now.
As always, you know, I have multiple books going at one time.
Of course. That brain can't just hold one.
Also, when we go to London, one of the things that I got to get done, One of the things I have to get done is two things. But we, as you know, there's two long plane rides, so it allows for this. And the Kindle makes it far more enjoyable than in the past, which is reading screenplays. And you know there's nothing I hate more than reading a screenplay.
Do I know?
Anyway, I'm reading a horror script that...
You've been asked to direct after the success of your...
No. Maybe, but maybe... cast and produce it.
Look,
if I got involved, I would get involved as a producer. I haven't read it yet, so we'll see. And also another one that just been asked to do as a favor and to give feedback. So I'm going to do it.
Good
because
for you.
I can. So anyway, please feel free not to ask me, though, to read your screenplay.
Hey, I wrote a screenplay. Could you read it?
Because truly there is, and this bears repeating, nothing I dislike more than reading a screenplay.
Oh, except short films, and you're doing one of those.
And I'm doing one of those, yeah. Only Nixon can go to China, which is, though, why I'm apt to be, again, possibly a good person to ask to do, to
right.
read the scripts, because I don't enjoy them.
Right.
I don't enjoy them. So I assess them from the very get-go, you know, as to whether or not they're working. And the reason I don't enjoy them is that when they're good, when they work, when they're well-constructed, they are effectively a blueprint.
Yes.
And I'm not someone who enjoys looking at blueprints.
Well, exactly. And particularly if you got a comedy on your hands, everybody says, this ain't funny. That's the other thing.
Well,
till it's done by the people who are performing it who are funny.
And here's the other thing, too. And you must have this experience when people ask you to, you know, it's always tough going through the dance of, okay, so they want my feedback on this. Now, how do I suss out whether or not what they really want is me to tell them how good it is?
Yeah, that's A.
Or do they actually want my feedback? Because life is too short for me not to let you know exactly what I think about it.
Yeah. I know. I was asked to read one once, and I restructured it because it was like all completely kerfuffled. And it was like, oh, yeah, thanks. And, of course, I saw it, and they kept it in its original structure.
Now, also on my Kindle,
that's all.
I'm reading...
on your Kindle, listen
to Sandra Senzin's Reversing Gum Disease Naturally, a Holistic Home Care Guide.
Fantastic.
Because I am concerned about that.
Are you concerned about gum disease all of a sudden?
Yeah, well, no, not all of a sudden. I should have been for quite a while.
Have you not seen a dentist?
I have, and you want to be a dentist, clearly.
Yell it out.
Listen to you. I have, and he has seen me, and, you know, there's been a lot of talk of some really serious gum surgery and things like this.
Good God.
You know, it's part of a, again, holistic, that's why I'm reading this, a more holistic systemic problem that includes, you know, my migraines.
Oh, right.
And so, and the acids that come up from my stomach and all this, nobody cares. But, so I'm reading this, and because I really do, you know, if we're going to attack this as with and treat this as with any health problem, you know, it does not exist independently.
Right.
That's, you know, so... Should so I? Trying to take a more holistic approach.
Fantastic.
It.
And you're...
So I'm reading that and...
Sucking tea tree oil. I'm going to just turn off...
I'm reading... I'm also reading something called A Band of Misfits.
Oh, really?
Realize that when you're talking to me from across the room, no one can hear you. Welcome to our worst show ever! They are
not
the
our
most
worst
interesting show podcast in the world. Andrew Baggerly is, for my money... And it is my money because I bought the book.
Mm-hmm.
He is, for my money, the best baseball writer in the country. And people might say, "Oh, well, you know, a baseball writer—that's a backhanded compliment." But you know, the thing about baseball that made it the American pastime, the national pastime for so long,
right,
is that unlike other sports, it is a sport that depends upon its lore. That depends upon its history.
True.
And what is history? Well, history is story of people.
Yeah.
And so it's all about the stories. And so the best baseball writers are excellent storytellers.
Right.
And he wrote a book about last year's World Series champion San Francisco Giants called A Band of Misfits, because this was a team that no one in their right mind should have ever thought could win anything.
Really?
And I mean, they were all players taken off the scrap heap of other teams. And so anyway, it was fascinating. And of course, for anyone who's even remotely entertained by the game or the story of baseball, they know that San Francisco has a long legacy of pain and torture, exceeded only by Chicago Cubs fans. I had heard wonderful things about this book, and so I'm reading about it. And it's great writing.
And I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, in this age of steroids and stuff like that, I think I always thought baseball had corporatized and sloughed away any kind of nuanced stories that could possibly happen, that you have all these personal trainers and all of these crappy things.
There is a documentary about one of the players on the team, Andres Torres, who was ostensibly a rookie last year because it was the first season where he really got a chance to play. Going into that season, I think he had 48 at-bats in his career before that, or something low, you know. But he's 33 years old. He's not a rookie.
No,
he's
right.
Been bumming around for a long time. And it wasn't until one of the real turning points, other than, you know, obviously, you know, you learn and you get better and you work at it for so long. But a big turning point for him was when he was finally diagnosed with ADHD and was put on medication. And there's a documentary being made about him right now. Well, there's an...
A lovely story.
An important story. And this is the thing about sports that I always say, and that, you know, not just me, the greatest coach in any sport, you know, in history, John Wooden, of UCLA basketball fame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, his point was he never taught anything to his players in practice, in games, that didn't have a real-world application.
Right.
If it didn't, it's irrelevant, because this is then just a game.
Right.
If it's not teaching life-building skills, if it's not teaching life success skills, then what's the point of this?
Right.
Otherwise, it's just bread and circuses, which is where we've
come to, which is why
I have exciting, distracting. These
yeah.
Things. So anyway, so this was why I gave the book a chance, and it's been a delightful read.
Well,
Andrew Baggerly is, in addition to being a wonderful writer, he's also quite the Star Trek fan, and I appreciate that. I always love a good Star Trek reference, as you know.
Does he throw one in every now and then?
I follow him on Twitter now, and he does.
Oh, you
he
do? Does.
Yeah, like he made a Red Hour reference.
Wow.
From an original series episode.
Totally.
So good. And once he even made a Tranya reference. Well, that's Howard drinking Tranya. I hope you relish it as much as I from the first season Star Trek. So anyway, reading that and then also finally getting a chance to really delve into Jonathan Franzen's Freedom. This is the writer who wrote The Corrections, which is, I think, the best novel of the last quarter century at least, and just an amazing writer. And already, just a short way into this book, I can tell you that this book is... The Corrections equal, if not its superior.
Wow.
So it's really quite something. So that's what I'm reading.
Fantastic.
Look what we did. And okay. This inspired me because I was actually thinking about your painting.
Yes.
Something we've never talked about on the show, and I'm springing this on
you. Oh, my gosh. You should have said.
But I want you to get into – when you paint,
yeah.
Do you – how do you work in terms of – do you have music on? Do you create a mood? Do you want it to be quiet? Do you want television on? Do you,
fantastic. Generally not television on because I'm often using my eyes to look at the painting. And television would be somewhat distracting. I tend to either put NPR on. But before I do that, I have these CDs that are... embed it with the music that actually resynchronizes your brain alpha, theta, and delta brainwave states.
Wow.
Yes. So I can get into a creative, intuitive, meditative state just with the headphones on, listening to like 15 minutes. And it's sort of like cricket chirping, but they're slightly out of sync. And then there's some music so that it's shifting orally the way your brainwave pattern so that I can get into just a mental state. And
but
then
you're into kind of a meditative.
Meditative, but it doesn't zone you out or anything like that.
Well, nor does meditation. I mean, this idea that meditation is supposed to be done sitting and blocking out the world and doing all this, any guru, any meditation teacher, anyone will tell you that that's kindergarten, that that's the training wheel.
Right.
You're meant to be meditating while you're doing your dishes, while you're driving in the world, while you're engaging with things.
Exactly.
To... awaken to a higher level of awareness and consciousness.
And this is always the problem I have with so many yoga places that are these sanctuaries away from like the noise and the thing and stuff like that. And I go, really, if you really want to develop that practice, it should be in a bustling urban metropolis where you can then develop that inner peace amongst all the wildness around you.
You came from a rural setting. I mean, close to a city and everything, but you came from a rural setting. But I grew up in the suburbs, and although I spent summers as a boy in a rural setting, but no one has more voices going on than I do. Right?
And in your head.
Both within me and without me.
Right.
And, of course, that's just a mirror. Fact. Exactly. You want to know what's going on within you? Look what's going on without you. And I don't know if meditation could have taken hold if I had not had that very instinct you were you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first taught a particular heart-centering meditation to really drop into compassion and unconditional love and intuition and not just harmony but also this kind of real sort of selfless service and intuition. When I first learned this meditation, I remember I learned it on a weekend, and then I flew to New York. I did that meditation the whole time on the flight because this was the time when I used to be really a white-knuckle flyer. And we experienced so much turbulence, and I was smiling. All through. And I go, okay, this is kind of good. I had something to push off against.
Right.
I was doing a job in New York, and I got up my first morning there, and I thought, okay, well, I need to do this. I said I would do this meditation every morning. I walked to Times Square. And this was when, this is a decade ago. Or
right.
Before they had shut down all the traffic.
Right. So the cars were still flying through.
Went
there.
At 9 a.m. So height of rush hour, 8:30 a.m., 8 a.m., something like that. Height of rush hour. Sat down in the middle of Times Square, and I did my heart-centering meditation.
Oh, that was you.
And it worked perfectly, and it really took hold, and it really, and it was exactly that. It was right. This sense that, no, it's...
Yeah, exactly.
It's supposed to be for anywhere. It's supposed to be.
Right.
So, what do you know what the name of those discs are, or who created them? Or is that something you're going to give me after?
I'll give you that afterwards. I think it's... I use some of Stephen Halpern stuff, too. But his is more incense of the mind. This is an actual oral. This comes from a university that does this kind of research. So there were four discs that were put out by the university, and the name of which escapes me at the moment.
Now, and what else does Dean Haglund listen to? Last week, after we finished the show, you put on this Frank Sinatra mix. What else is Dean Haglund listening to?
Well, of course, who can't go wrong with Led Zeppelin? The classic two-disc set. I mix that also with my Sinatra, often put it in random, and the two are somewhat complementary, believe it or not. You'll also find that on my...
Less surprising when you think about the directions that, like, Robert Plant's solo work.
True enough,
come,
right? Exactly. Yeah. And that you'll find it also on my waterproof MP3 that can go underwater as I swim. I will have both Led Zeppelin and...
I never knew this.
Yes, isn't that awesome? And then, of course, NPR has some fantastic morning shows, Morning Becomes Eclectic, and all of those sort of things. And they are always keeping me up with the Arcade Fire and the, you know, all the kids that like the new music and the alternative stuff. So,
oh, that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, but ask me for a specific name other than Arcade Fire, got nothing. But I love the music. I don't go out and buy
That's
their...
Fine.
I don't buy their...
That's fine.
I'm not buying it.
I just was interested in what you listen to, because we've never talked about this
We have
before.
Never talked about that. I'm not sure what brought this up.
I think I was wondering, based on, like what you use as when you're painting, when you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because I started working on something again where I could finally start listening to music while I was doing it, as opposed to, say, editing, where
right. Yeah, you
can't.
Need,
you can't have everything's else in going right. on. Since you asked, what do I listen to?
I did ask. Okay, sure.
I got to tell you, I just purchased on iTunes.
Oh.
And I've broken myself of the habit of
stealing.
Of stealing music, unless it's unavailable on iTunes or Amazon. If it's not available, if the original recording is not available, I will.
Go BitTorrent and steal the damn thing.
Or I'll get the vinyl. I'll get a 45, and as you know, I will turn it into an MP3.
Right.
Which always sounds... cooler anyway. But Gangsta Grass's theme song for the TV show Justified is so good.
Really?
It is in regular rotation on my iPod right now. Now, you've not been watching.
I have not. I know. You're right. I forgot to TiVo that thing.
Oh, God. It's so great. Anyway, and...
You're up on this Justified like even more than Mad Men you were.
Well, partially because, again, it's so great to see a show hit its stride, to be there to witness it hitting its stride.
Seems so early to hit its stride.
Second season.
Oh, it is second season. All right. Okay.
Yeah. So I love that theme song. Thanks to our old friend Yoshi Kato.
Oh, yes.
Works for iTunes and music journalist, been a guest on this show, and who hosts a special installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour,
right.
Never before heard, and will never be heard anywhere other than on the DVDs for The Truth Is Out There.
The special, bonus.
Not the bonus disc. It's on the DVDs with the film.
Oh, I didn't
it's
know that.
It's both embedded as an MP3 that you can download off your disc, or you can just stream it in the DVD player.
Look at that.
Yes.
That's clever.
Anyway, he turned me on to a band, the Budos Band, and I'm now listening regularly to the Budos Band 1 and 2. They are a 10, it varies, but like a 10 to 13 piece band playing Ethiopian music with a soul, solid soul undertone.
Wow.
And it's very acid jazz, which was a movement in the 90s that was absolutely my favorite.
Your favorite.
I just...
You were, I believe, dressing as acid jazz band members. Yeah, I totally remember that.
So you didn't know me then, but you do remember it. Because you read about it in the papers of the world.
Right.
So anyway, so thanks to Yoshi for that. And anyway, an album that when it was released in Europe or in the UK, debuted at number one. Was the second album by Plan B, and it finally became available in the States. And I've been dying to get this. And I can't tell you how long it's been when I listened to an album the first time and went, holy crap, this is an album to grow old with. I mean, it's like Marvin Gaye, What's Going On?
What?
I mean, and it's called The Defamation of Strickland Banks.
And it is by Plan B is the name.
Plan B, real name, I forget what his real name is, but he's also known as Ben Drew. Mm-hmm. And it's his second album, so much soul, and it is, it's incredible.
It's crazy.
So thanks to, I think it's Q Magazine, I found out about this.
Oh, right.
It made their best of list for 2010. Anyway, so that's been my big discovery.
Look at you go. So you've been reading and listening to music and said to hell with movies.
No, I still watch stuff, but you keep it going. Keep it in constant rotation, because it all fuels
Mr. Pop Culture.
Each other. Two other things that I want to, an album that I want to give a shout out to. Really good actor, writer Spencer Berger has a band called Auditorium, and they did an album. But when they did the album, the band was just him. So he was playing all the instruments.
Wow.
And it's kind of, if Simon and Garfunkel were young and hip today,
right?
It's the sort of thing they would be doing. So the name of the album is Be Brave, and it's so good. And the harmonies, which are
him.
All him, are incredible.
Really?
And so it's Auditorium, Be Brave.
How many hours in the studio must you do to make a whole band?
I don't know. Maybe we should ask him sometime. That would be kind of an interesting interview.
Absolutely. Let's get him on the show.
And finally, something old that I discovered. I feel bad that I did not know who this person was already, and discovered it through the joys of used bins in a secondhand store. You know, some 99-cent record that
is thrown.
Showed the decades of age on it, because the record's from the 1920s. And it's Roland Hayes.
Roland Hayes. I've heard of that guy.
He is considered the first African-American male concert artist to receive wide international acclaim.
Right.
He was a lyric tenor. He was the son of former slaves.
Right.
I think I wrote down where he was born. He was born in 1887.
Wow. Right.
June 3rd, my father's birthday.
Look at that.
So born in 1887 to former slaves, and he lived to 1977. So a good long life.
That is a long time.
90 years.
Yeah.
But by the mid-20s, he was making... Now, this is the son of former slaves.
Right.
By the mid-1920s, he was making $100,000 a year in 1920s money.
That's big money.
Not
then.
Adjusted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge money.
Right, yeah, for singing.
Anyway, like I said, lyric tenor, and it just fills me with such joy.
I know that because Paul Robeson was the other opera singer that I
knew. And great actor.
And great actor. And you would know him to singing Old Man River in the movie version of Showboat. But if you followed any of Paul Robeson's music, you would have got to Mr. Hayes as well eventually. So I'm glad you picked that up. And I'm surprised you found, was it a 1920s disc, that heavier Luddite?
Whatever. I think so. I'm going to find out what that material was.
Remember those old 78s are like... murder
yeah,
weapons.
Yeah, it probably doesn't date back to then. You're probably right. It probably dates to the 40s when he was still active.
Right.
And it's a reissue of classic recordings.
Right.
Probably. But still,
that's still
we're going back 70 years now for the record that I have. But that's interesting. So that's what we're listening to. I think first time ever.
I think so.
That's what we're listening to.
I don't think anybody's ever asked or you know.
That's kind of cool.
We have
done a show about music before, but I don't think we've ever kind of...
said what we listen to.
Yeah.
I know. I feel weird.
I'm all exposed. I feel vulnerable.
Totally vulnerable.
You know, we are, speaking of vulnerable, we're going to be standing up in front of a crowd after the world premiere of The Truth Is Out There.
Oh, you are. I'll be drunk. No, I'm kidding. I'm gonna
as will I, and we'll be standing up there in front of them. Whether we're wearing pants is anybody's guess.
In your face, London.
We're going to be there, and I'm really interested in seeing what the reaction is and everything, because
Sure, we've had like one small test on it.
One test screening, you know, and it's just going to be really fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, you know, you get kind of a wide variety of reactions because it is that kind of movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked on past weeks about the running time and everything. You know, we were trying to set up a benefit screener for a theater.
Oh, yeah.
Here in L.A. for Rogue Machine Theater. And the guy who runs the theater rejected it because the movie's too long. The film's too long. And it was like, it's the weirdest. That doesn't make any sense to me at all because it's like, you're going to get all the money from the screening. It's just found money. And you people do send out requests for donations every year. Here's just a fundraiser. You don't have to do anything. But the movie's too long. And so it makes no sense to me at all. But having met the man briefly, it's not surprising.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, it's interesting because I'm beginning to wonder. Something started to spark in my
ethereal.
A little bit. There's two reactions to the running time a bit. In terms of when people that I've experienced so far, and again, it's just a certain select group of people. I mean, not a huge. The people who've seen it are not legion at this point. But the running time situation of it being quote unquote too long falls into two camps.
Uh-huh.
There has been the attitude of people who think, well, you could cut out and just keep the meat. And the meat being defined by what they found interesting going in,
right,
and what they believe in,
and their personal interest.
That's the important stuff. We've certainly met people who have said that.
Yes, very clear.
Then there's the show business people.
Oh, right.
Who, it's very interesting. I'm beginning to think have a problem with the audacity
of a document.
Of not trying, following the rules.
Of not trying to get it into a theatrical window release rule.
Or like you keep saying, well, you know, our friend Tucker suggested that I do an alternate cut, an abridged cut, so that it would work for film festivals.
Right.
So that we could then, you know, I guess garner the press that would come with film festivals. But, you know, as we've talked about, film festivals keep the money from those screens.
That's
so
right.
Why would we do more work at our expense to make them money?
Right, because the only upshot is then you sell it to a distribution company, which we're planning to distribute ourselves,
right,
and getting into a studio theatrical situation, then you're in a whole other ball of horrible wax that you don't want
to
be in.
It really comes down to, again, as we've talked about so much before, you know, no good movie is ever too long. No bad movie is ever too short.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, we got to this point where this is what the film is, I would have liked it to have been a shorter running time. I really would have. And that's why, you know, I listen to people when they say this. But, you know, again, as I've said, we have had a lot of people see it in the sense that when you're talking about hundreds of people and no two people agree on what you could cut, you kind of know you're done.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, you have to really, and I don't think studios understand this, and test when you do test screenings and you do this sort of thing. It's all well and good, even when there is a consensus to say, okay, well, this scene can go. But it's very tricky when you're making something like this because that scene that people might not like nevertheless might be partially responsible for the things that they do like later in the movie.
Well, true enough, right?
Even by contrast.
Yeah.
Even if it's that. Never mind that something might be set up that is paid off later. And there, that brings us back to this film too. There is nothing in this film that is standalone in the sense that it doesn't get mirrored or responded to,
resonating
somewhere else. There are plenty of connections that you can make
right
with anything that comes up in the movie, and so at some point it really is okay. Go, you know, you just have to say, look, there's nothing more that we can decide should go. Now let's give this to the audience and let them play with it. And you need to be okay with those reactions. But that reaction is really interesting from the professionals who basically more or less say, you just can't do this.
Yeah.
This is not done.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
And I'm beginning to wonder if there is a little bit of a knee jerk of, you know, Who are these guys to think they don't have to play by the rules?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
We're mavericks again? Rebels?
And it wasn't. And it wasn't about that. It wasn't about flaunting the rules. It really was about really thinking that there are better ideas, especially for this particular project.
Right. And as you said,
and one of those good ideas is giving the audience more and a more authentic experience.
Well, and not only that, the structure itself is circular. And if you take out a
or
pie...
Or spherical. With, spherical, not circular, because circular implies it keeps coming back to the same point.
Right.
Spherical, as I like to say, is you might think you've come back to the same point until you look down and you realize how much you've evolved upwards out of that point where you were before. Your understanding of it has expanded.
Right. And with any sphere, if you take out any sort of wedge or parallelogram, that sphere collapses in on itself. So structurally, I think that it would ultimately not work if we did even remove something that I personally didn't like. Like my fat ass in a scene, right? Like, you know, that's not the issue.
Well, and an abridged version, this idea of an abridged version, I don't know. I sort of feel like that kind of defeats the message of the film.
Right. Yes. I guess. But then can you compress a sphere? No. Well,
And it certainly does defeat the purpose if, you know, you think, well, this can be cut out.
Yeah.
This is of less value, or this.
Hey, well, wait a sec. How did Dances with Wolves get by? That was like a freaking 3-hour.
Well, that's the thing. You know, and somebody said, unless it's Lord of the Rings, it can't be. Look, there is no coincidence that your biggest box office successes are much longer than our film.
Yes.
And it is just an accepted thing that documentaries are supposed to be 90 minutes long. That was not true for the most successful documentaries before the mid to late 90s.
Is that right?
And so some sort of distribution methodology was put in place where this running time worked better from an industry standpoint.
Yeah.
But think about the most successful documentaries before then, the most famous one, Sorrow and the Pity. Hello?
Yeah,
That's many hours long. How about what was a huge box office success for a documentary and an Oscar nominee for best editing.
What?
And it was 3 hours long, and it was Hoop Dreams.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you're going to create intimacy with the subjects, you need to create intimacy with the subjects.
Right.
And you don't worry about running time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see what that reaction is. We should thank Dave Sadler.
Yes!
Of Phenomena Magazine. Did you see this? Did you hear about this?
I think it was...
He sent me the May 2011 issue, which now... For people who don't know, Phenomena Magazine is the scientific investigation of the unexplained, and this is their 25th issue, and there is a great ad in it for our film, The Truth Is Out There.
Come on!
It's beautiful.
It's nice.
You know, you can find the magazine and order the magazine at phenomenamagazine.co.uk. It's based in the UK.
Will he be at the screening?
I don't know, but well, that probably doesn't
lovely.
Bear. It would be lovely, absolutely. Dave, if you're listening, it would be lovely to see you. However,
thank you.
I just kind of want to express how cool this magazine is.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of loved, I don't know what I loved more, that he put an ad for our film in the magazine or that he sent me a copy of it, because I'm just loving
the
so
articles.
Many of the stories in this about the,
what's,
you know,
the
conspiracy behind the lunar hoax exposed.
Oh.
You know, it really, it's, here's the thing about this magazine with conspiracies and unexplained phenomena and all this, you know, and it makes sense that our movie, The Truth Is Out There, would be advertised in something like this, because this magazine is always fun. It's always
fun.
How about this? Like, the things that go bump in the night
so
is
about,
the headline of one of their stories.
Ghost stories.
Yeah, apparitions, ghosts, phantoms. They cover a story about black helicopters appearing mysteriously over Manchester in the UK.
Speaking of that, you see the skies over LA as Obama left?
Mm.
Oh, that was cool, wasn't it? C-140 went right over this place. Probably packing all the entourage vehicles.
So there's so much great stuff that, I mean, we could spend a whole hour just talking about Phenomenon Magazine, but I hope people will check it out. Phenomenonmagazine.co.
And speaking of checking out, I was on the Rob Simone show.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
I thought we were going to do this when...
The
English show?
The one in England. The one in England. Yeah. Great. So I think that's already... They had to rush it. It had to come out Sunday, which is why I didn't call you to come on the show. So it was just me talking about the show, the Rob Simone show. And you can pick up the shows on his website, robsimone.com. And I talked, and we had a good long chat about the whole documentary.
Nice.
He's in it, of course.
Right.
A little bit. So he was able to expand both on his ideas and what other people talked
about. That's awesome.
Totally awesome.
Another old friend of yours, Scott Meredith.
Yes.
From the Conscious Media Network.
Of course.
They did a nice little piece.
We're getting avalanched of a media avalanche.
Today,
on this
it's huge. I mean, I did a little Google search. There's articles all over the web. Yahoo Finance page has a thing on it.
Really?
Thanks to our friend John Bryan. Slide TV News. And they're running a review on the film shortly.
Yahoo Finance? What's the financial angle?
Peer back the thing about how publicity works on the web.
No, I'm loving Yahoo Finance
I'm not saying this is how it works, but... articles used to be written for Newswire.
Yes, remember
and
that.
And then when there was empty place in the newspaper,
you stick a Newswire.
You grabbed a Newswire story and put it in your newspaper.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what happens on the web. But the thing is that these are people who just really like the film or like you or tolerate me and they're just helping spread the word. And, it's our absolute refusal to embrace marketing this film that is kind of our marketing. This film.
It's funny, right?
It's because by us for you, and this conversation is really how... The story of the film is being spread.
Because we talk about marketing so often on this film, and we often review movies that are awesome but had a marketing campaign that led an audience astray on what it was and screwed up that movie. I mean, how many episodes have we done on that? That you'll soon be able to find as we upload.
Right. And we promise that we're going to have a guest from a studio marketing department on the show sometime this summer.
That's going to be awesome.
I got a wonderful email, too, from someone who likes The Truth is Out There on Facebook.
Oh, I see.
Facebook.com, Truth Movie.
I thought you were pointing out.
It was a lovely, lovely email, and expressing hope that I am not a member of any one of these disinformation gangs.
The disinformation.
You know, and we get this sometimes. People are a little worried that, about what our angle might be. Like, we received another email that I need to show you from someone who wants to do an interview with you after the screening, very interested in our angle on crop circles, because this is someone who has a very interesting take on it and a very pointed take on this thing.
Cool.
And the truth is, you and I didn't have any angle on any of
this. That's the whole...
What we really set out was to... find out what does it mean to search for the truth, and how do you know it when you find it, and what is it, the importance of getting to know the people rather than just listening to the information.
Right, and then immediately evaluating that information. You know, the talk that Rob Simone and I had was and we had discussed this too, is the differentiation between what is valued and what is valid. The validity value argument,
right,
which is such a exacto knife of delineation, that it comes down to this ability that if you're coming in at an angle, you will determine what is valid before understanding its value, and therefore lose both its value and its validity, I think. Though, you can get stuck in semantics at this point. But that's sort of where I...
Yeah, I mean, and no matter what you believe or what you know, it's much more fun to live a life that feels valuable.
Right. Right.
And this motivates some people to fight the man and to become a leader and to take this on and to take this. At the same time, though, there's a certain hollowness to that value if it's absent time spent with people you love and time mm-hmm. spent in community.
Right.
That this is the thing, is that you know, what we all do crave at some level is community, camaraderie,
tribal,
with our fellow people,
really?
And to belong in that sense, and so this is our way of being a part of community. It is to sing for our supper. That's who we are, right?
Right.
We really are reclaiming that for ourselves. That you know, what we do is not necessarily so important. It's that it's our way of singing for our supper, and we hope that our singing is pleasing to you,
right?
And rewarding and nourishing to you in some way, to thank you for the nourishment that you're giving us. And so this is our way of being a part of community. That said, what I am, you know, in my 42 years now, quite aware of, that I am a member of community by not being a member of any group. So in answer to this email about being, you know, there might be disinformation in this film, and I might not know it.
Right.
Because we're letting people share what they have to offer.
Yeah.
We're not censoring people. We're not, you know, obviously we had to edit these conversations, but we tried to edit them in as authentic and a conscientious way as possible.
Yeah.
Not to change meaning, not to change who the people were.
No, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly, right. Because it isn't about that. And... but there might be disinformation in it. And so therefore, because we've made a movie that had it, it might help disseminate it. I also think, though, and I know this, that this is a film that does offer the tools of how we can all kind of make our way through those minefields of information and disinformation, through
right.
that information blizzard, as you call it.
Yeah, absolutely.
How we can make our way through it and live a not only a rich life, but a fun life. And so I may be guilty of having disinformation in this movie because I
you
quite
no
honestly
idea.
Would know. I mean, you know, I'm a novice to a lot of this stuff.
It's true.
I am pretty much never going to be guilty of being a member of any group.
It's hard enough to get you to come. Well, yes. It's hard enough to get you on this podcast, for crying out loud. And that's just two of us.
So
there you go.
I don't know where to go.
Well, that's fantastic. And good for you.
We had so much news in the world to talk about
that
we haven't gotten to, and we're not going to get to it. I mean,
so maybe our next show.
Well,
but then it's not news anymore.
No, it won't be news.
Just list it
but
in 3 minutes.
But how about, you know, Time Magazine? Talk about disinformation. Time Magazine runs their list of the 100 most influential people in the world.
Oh, good God.
Amy Poehler is one of the 100 most influential people in the world?
Perhaps.
Mia Wasikowska, the young actress who plays Jane Eyre, is one of the 100 most influential people in the world? I mean, if I was to say this, wouldn't you swear that it was like an Entertainment Weekly article?
I thought you'd say I thought
Colin Firth is one of the 100. Now, I would like to believe that Colin Firth could be influential because he seems like quite the gentleman.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice if that was actually an influence?
Right.
Oh, I am influenced by him to be more gentleman.
I am civil now.
I wish that was.
Yeah.
I wish that was true. And to not take myself so seriously.
Wouldn't that be something?
I wish that was. Something that I do take seriously, although I don't, I try not to take myself seriously, but is an annual event throughout the USA called Denim Day. And I've talked about this on the show before. It's not a laughing matter.
No, it's not.
I've talked about this show before. And it's coming up on Wednesday, the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
We will both be in transit
yes.
to the UK. I might take this opportunity, as I'm being encouraged to do.
Please do.
By putting on an impromptu sexual assault awareness presentation on the British Airways flight to
that'd be
the
awesome.
UK.
That, I'm sure everyone would appreciate.
But it's Denim Day throughout the USA, part of sexual violence prevention and education campaign.
And do I wear denim?
To show solidarity because
very
it dates back all the way to 1999, and it was an effort in the United States to protest an Italian Supreme Court decision
right.
where a rape conviction was overturned because the Italian Supreme Court decided that the woman's jeans were so tight that the man who raped her could not have removed them without her assistance, and therefore she must have wanted it.
Yeah.
So the rape conviction was overturned, and so Denim Day is an occasion, an annual occasion with rallies around the country to just try to expose some of the myths and misconceptions
right.
about sexual assault. And
that's this Wednesday.
You can find out more at denimdayusa.org, denimdayusa.org. You can find your Chilpack Hollywood Hour
everywhere.
Everywhere on the web. We are literally...
Legion.
Well, you know what we're doing.
What are we doing?
We're changing the way people listen to the internet.
Thank goodness.
And we've been doing so since May of 2007.
Oh my gosh.
This is... Your Chilpack Hollywood Hour number 206.
Look at that.
Two more episodes and it's our fourth anniversary show. And we might have a kind of a wonderful gift to the
look at that.
To the crowd by then. Next week, of course, a special guest. You can find,
all
your Chilpack Hollywood Hour at chilpackhollywood.com. Download, stream, subscribe via iTunes.
Please do.
You can find us on MySpace at myspace.com/chilpackhollywood. I was thinking
we're
about losing all our MySpace accounts. And then we get a friend request yesterday, so I don't know.
Wow.
Facebook, again, facebook.com.
Be a liker.
/chilpackhollywood. And you can write us. About Chilpack Hollywood Hour, about The Truth Is Out There, about anything you want at chilpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Follow Dean Haglund on Twitter.
Yes, D Haglund is my Twitter.
Twitter.com/D Haglund. I'm Twitter.com/Phil Larinus. We will be tweeting throughout our adventures in London, England.
England. That's how I'm going to spell it.
And until we get back, I'm Phil Larinus.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you then.